Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that answers questions about the Christian faith to help you grow from milk to meat into wise, skilled, world-changing followers of Jesus Christ. With theologian and pastor Chad Graham, author and pastor Al Desjardins, and me, your host, Steve Bastian. Today is part two of Talking Politics with pastor and former member of parliament, Reid Elley.
I mean, a Christian has to really vote intelligently. They have to get to know what these parties stand for. And, you know, I'm not saying everything in the Conservative Party is I agree with. I don't. But I agree more with them than I do with any other party.
That seems to be where it comes down to, is I talk to these guys and they almost say the lesser of the three evils seems to be a phrase that I hear a lot, the lesser of the three evils. Yeah. And it's not a matter of I'm totally sold out to this party or that party. It's when I look at the fallenness of man and the fallenness of the political system, when I try to decide where I'm going to cast my vote, how I'm going to engage in the democratic process, that's the one that I think will do the least amount of damage, or that's the one that I distrust the least. Let me ask a follow-up question. There is a political cynicism out there, especially among a lot of people. So how do you battle that political cynicism where they just want to wash their hands and walk away, or they just see everything as evil?
Well, politics is no different than any of the other aspects of our lives. You know, if we're walking the talk, people are going to see that eventually. When I got first elected, I won this seat by about 9,000 votes. Mm-hmm. In 2000, when I ran again, I won by 12,000 votes. Mm-hmm. I only lost 9 polls in the whole riding. They called it a landslide. Now, I can only suspect that people decided that I was somebody that they really wanted to have as their member of parliament for whatever reasons, whatever my characteristics were. You know, if you walk the talk, people respond to it. Now, not everybody's going to ever agree with you, and there were issues that I took a stand on that I got huge public flack for right across the nation, especially on gay marriage. And it hurt. It hurt deeply to have people talk about me the way they did because they didn't really know me. That's what the media does. The media makes all kinds of statements about people, and they really don't know them. And the media can be a very, very hurtful thing. And it's why members of parliament are taught in their early days how to handle the media. You don't have to answer every question.
It makes me think, as you go through some of these different questions, you know, discussing holding to your principles in maybe dissent from the government, or one of the historical debates within Christian thinking about government is what our perception should be towards some of these different viewpoints. Mm-hmm. And so today we often hear about tolerance, and that usually means doing whatever the liberal media perspective is, and anything else is intolerant. But the historic view of tolerance in the bigger picture is often discussed today under the term principled pluralism. And that's the idea for our listeners, that there are different people within our society who have very strong principles. There are conservative Christians. There are traditional liberals. There are libertarians. There are Muslims. There are Hindus. And they are all valued parts of our society from different perspectives. And so when you come together, you allow each of them, essentially, to stand up for their principles. This is generally called principled pluralism. But historically, Christians have sort of advocated for Christian ethics, Christian values, a sort of Christian state, as it were. And we saw that in the Puritan New England. We've seen that in Great Britain. We've seen that in some of the early years in Canada. And then as that has morphed and changed, really, we still basically have a bunch of Christian people in Canada discussing Christian traditions. Today's different. Now we're finally different. We truly have these significantly different voices. In your opinion and from your experience, is that something that Christians should champion, this idea of principled pluralism, or should we simply just champion Christian values and not worry about this broader philosophical principle?
Well, I think you've got a couple of things going in that question. You know, the first thing is, yes, we're in an age where the word tolerance has lost its meaning. And because of the huge influence of media and how that particular viewpoint has say, infiltrated universities, institutes of higher learning, tolerance means tolerant of my view, you know, You have to accept my view, but if you've got a different view, forget it, you know? And we've seen this with the pro-life groups on university campuses where, you know, they have the right to have their point of view just like everybody else does, but it's just incredible how a so-called liberal higher education institution will shut down free speech, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this never happened when I was going to university in the 60s. It was still a liberal education in the fact that all viewpoints were welcomed and not just tolerated but talked about intelligently.
That's the classical liberalism you're talking about.
Yeah, classic liberalism. But today, if you want to hold a meeting on pro-life issues in a university, you're going to have to you'll have to expect that there'll be people coming to that meeting to try to shut you down. You know?
Well, actually, I've listened to that online, and they were talking about how if you are a liberal and you want to espouse liberal things, there will be no conservative standing up, yelling and screaming at you, and then running past you with their shirt off. Yeah. Whereas if you are a conservative and you want to express your feelings or express your opinions, you will have a liberal standing there shouting you down. Because our conservative mindset is not to yell our opinion. It's not the way we're built. Yeah. And so it sort of swayed towards the liberals because the conservatives got afraid, then the liberals are the ones who have the loudest shout.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I think it's because the moral worldview of conservative Christians is far different than left-wing liberals. And they don't care about decency and tolerance and allowing other people to share their views and live their lives the way they want. And it's, you know, what they started out accusing conservatives of doing, they are now doing in extreme. And so, yeah, it's a big battle out there. Now, there was a second part of your question, and I can't remember what it was now.
Yeah, just looking at that reality, the philosophical umbrella being discussed today in Christian circles anyway, and others, is that we ought to support the idea of principled pluralism, right, that we should be champions of each person, each group being able to stand up for their principles. And, yeah, and as we have opportunities, should we be championing that in Canadian society, or should we just simply champion Christian values and not worry about the others so much?
Yeah. No, I agree, and as sort of a bedrock principle I think that Christians should follow is that we should champion free speech. You know, if we don't champion it, then we're going to totally lose it, you know. And that means free speech for the Muslim, for the Hindu, for the Sikh, for the atheist, you know. Now, I think we're starting to grab a hold of that. And it's interesting that people like Ezra Levant are championing this from his Jewish perspective and standing up for Christians, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, I've known Ezra since 1992 when we had the referendum in Calgary, and I was in charge of the referendum in Calgary Center. And one day, you know, this young guy walks into my office and says, "My name's Ezra Levant, and I want to help out with the referendum." Of course, the Reform Party was leading the charge against the Charlottetown Accord, and I knew right away that this guy is gonna, you know, he's gonna let his voice be known in our society. So here we got Ezra championing this pluralism. By saying everybody ought to have the right to share their opinion. There are some opinions that, you know, we don't agree with, but at the same time, those opinions should be allowed to be shared. So,
can I push you back on that a little bit?
Yeah.
Some people are dumb and other people are evil.
Okay.
So, like, I get this whole idea that you say, oh, it's nice to have tolerance and it's nice to listen to people's opinion, but at the same time, aren't there some people out there that really don't get an opinion? Let me throw, you know, murderers or pornographers, you know, people that are legit evil, or for that matter, people that just stand up and just espouse hatred for religion, hatred for, you know, atheists, hatred against another group, like ISIS, standing up and saying, "I will just plain old kill you." Do they get a voice? Or is that just something you have to take because that's the society we want to live in?
Well, I think those people that you've mentioned do get a voice, and they do it by their actions, you know, I mean, that are very public. I mean, the guy who's murdering somebody, it soon becomes well known. What ISIS does around the world is well known. And so, yeah, they get their opportunity to press their point, you know. And many of them do it in violent and extreme ways. And, you know, from that point of view, when that happens, there has to be a pushback by people who believe differently. Now, how you do the pushback is probably the center of great controversy. You know, I mean, even in this election campaign right now, you know, where the Conservative Party is saying, look, we got to deal with those guys. And so we sent our troops over there to be part of the coalition to deal with it. And the other party say, oh, no, that's not how we deal with it. We need to send overcoats to them when they're, you know, when they're freezing, you know. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I do agree that there are people who act badly in our society that have to be shut down just because of the extreme effect this has upon people.
In an open society, though, in my opinion anyway, the marketplace is going to take care of the ideas.
Mm-hmm,
And when we have those extremities, we have already in place laws to deal with it. If somebody, we have hate laws, I suppose, if someone's giving true hate, if you have criminal activity, murder, terrorism, they're going to jail. Mm-hmm. They'll get their day in court where we'll let them speak.
Okay, listen, they'll come out of jail and they will come out of court, or they will come out and they will say things like, for example, we decide we want to all meet together and we're going to talk about who gets a voice in the room. Someone will stand up and say, you know what we really need in here? We need a militant feminist and we need somebody from ISIS. And we also, it'd be great if we could have a former crazy person in here, and we need them to be a voice as well, because, you know, they have an opinion. And there will be people out there that say, you know what, you're right, we do need to listen to crazy people. And I just wonder. I apologize if I'm getting off the side, because it just kind of bugs me, the idea that for example, in the church, we don't let everybody have an opinion. We just don't. Not everybody gets to stand behind the pulpit. Not everybody gets to be in the elder team. Not everybody gets to be a deacon. So not everybody gets a voice, because we believe in demonic realm. We believe that Satan tries to use human agents to spread lies and hatred.
Yeah, I understand. You know, the problem, and I also agree, however, that in some ways the social contract that we have in our society, which says murderers are going to be dealt with by the justice system, it's in effect, and it deals with that person. Now, does the social contract that we have with each other deal with everybody? No. In many cases, the social contract has been broken today. It's been fragmented. And so we have all these different voices out there that are clamoring for attention and approval. But somewhere along the line, we have to regroup as a society and say, what do we really believe? Mm. And how are we going to, as a society, interact with all of these extreme views that we see out there? And I'm hoping that our Christian faith and you know, the worldview we have from Scripture will help us as Christians to be part of putting that social contract back together, some kind of consensus in our society as to how we deal with things.
And we have a political mechanism, Al, for those who, you know, are way out there kind of crazy. We call it the Senate.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
I wish I got that joke. That'd be probably a good joke if I got it.
You start to address this a little bit, what you just said, Reed, but more specifically, what advice would you give pastors around informing their flock around politics and government? How would you arm other pastors that around this topic, because you've lived in their roles and in the politics, and what would you want a pastor to know, especially like people like Al, who doesn't know much about politics in general? So
right. I think the pastors have a responsibility to know what's going on in the political realm, probably more than anybody else, because they're a leader. You know, they're a spiritual leader in their area, so they need to do some study. Take a look at what the political parties say. Mm-hmm. Can you, as a pastor, agree with what this political party is teaching, what it wants to do if it gets into power? Now, do you then stand up in your pulpit and tell people that they need to vote a certain way? No. I don't think that's right, because there are people in our congregations who have very diverse views on politics. You know, I know that there are people in our congregation who happen to support the NDP. I don't agree with them, but I love them anyway. You know? There are people who are classical liberals, have voted liberal all their life. You know, I find it hard to know how people can continue to vote like that if they really know what those parties stand for. But you don't stand up in your pulpit and say, you know, I've studied all the major parties' platform, and so I want to tell you that I agree with this party more than the other, you know. Right now, our pastor struggles with that because somebody will get up during the prayer time and want to pray for Stephen Harper, you know. You know, they bring it up within the congregation. And, you know, I think he deals with it well. He says, well, you know what, we're going to pray for all the political leaders. Mm. And I think that's the way you have to do it. Does that stop political conversations going on after the church? Of course not. And I'm as guilty as the next political guy, you know, of engaging people in political conversations after the church service, you know. Those people will come up to me and say, well, how do you think the election's going? Well, that opens up a whole, you know.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the total disjunction that some people propose today, but of course the church has its priority in the gospel. Mm-hmm. But yet through history, churches have been leading discussion points of, and I think the difference is that we do have a voice. You talked about earlier being salt and light and so on. We have a voice on the ethics. We have a voice on the values that are being exposed, where we're not necessarily endorsing certain policies per se. We are certainly saying this is a moral evil being proposed that the Bible speaks against, that Christian tradition is against, and that we don't want to support.
And we certainly have a compulsion and a command in Scripture for us to pray for our leaders and our politicians.
Even the ones we disagree with.
Especially the ones we disagree with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, the church and Christian people cannot ignore politics. I mean, it's dangerous. It's the same if we ignore other aspects of life and don't speak out on it or have some kind of world view on it. I mean, the environment. I mean, Christians should have a worldview on the environment that motivates them in terms of their stewardship of the earth. You know, mm-hmm. There's all kinds of things. The problem, I think, is that over the years, too, our so-called Christian voice has become very disjointed.
Yeah.
And you have churches who certainly are not conservative churches, who certainly, you know, have a worldview that places them squarely within the parameters of a certain political party. And my view of that, however, is that those churches are slowly dying, and I don't know where you go from that. You know, do you lose a whole bunch of people who could be so-called committed Christians who just stop going to church and then don't participate in the political spectrum at all? I think that's part of the problem we have in our society.
Hmm. Hey, can I close on a question? I'm couching it because I'm afraid that it's going to be a little silly. Now, I have sort of a perspective, and a lot of people have a perspective of politicians, these slick-minded people. You Google image politician, and it doesn't come up with a lot of flattering pictures, if you know what I mean, that you guys are all rich lawyers and economists who are so out of touch with the average Joe you can't possibly consider what reality is like anymore. Can you give me a nice average Joe story, maybe like an embarrassing story or something funny that happened to you as a politician, just to show us that you guys, you know, put your pants on one leg at a time like everyone else?
Oh, wow. Oh, gosh.
See, I think back to the NDP, because you remember the Orange Crush that came through Quebec, right? I just consider the fact that a lot of these guys who are currently on the Hill now were sitting in their underwear in their basement eating Cheetos, smoking pot, and all of a sudden they realized, boom, they're in politics from now on, because the NDP just swept, and these guys were just on a list somewhere. So I'd imagine they have a lot of really good stories about their first days on Parliament Hill and how crazy it was and how different it was. And so I'm just curious if you guys you have any good stories.
Yeah, okay. A couple, maybe. One I remember is that when I got to Ottawa in 1997, they had this orientation session for all members of Parliament. And the present Speaker of the House, Gil Parent, gave us a welcome. And the very first thing he said to us, he said, you've all won the lottery. And I'm thinking, what in the world does he mean, I've won the lottery? Was he talking about all the money we were going to make? Was he talking about, that's what elections are, lotteries? You know, you pays your money and takes your choice? That sort of thing, you know? And that sure struck me. And then it was kind of followed up at the Rideau Hall party that the Governor General had for all of the members of Parliament. So you get all dressed up and you go to Rideau Hall and you're welcomed by the Governor General and spouse. And then you go down and you sit at a table with a whole bunch of other people. And I just happened to sit down with a bunch of reform members. Then we saw the Prime Minister and his wife, John Chrétien and Eileen, making their way through the room, and they're stopping at every table and you know, doing the thing, welcoming us. And so John Chrétien gets up to me and he says, "And where are you from?" And I said, "Well, I'm from Nanaimo." "Oh, I know Nanaimo well. I have been to Nanaimo." And I thought, well, that's nice. And so his parting remark was, "Well, you just have fun." I'm thinking, the Prime Minister of Canada tells me to have fun as a member of Parliament. The Speaker of the House tells me I've won the lottery. And I'm sitting there wondering, what have I gotten into here? You know?
Did you have fun?
Most of the time.
All right, good. See?
Most of the time. And I felt right. Like that's where God wanted me for those, you know, those years of my life, 7.5 years. That's where God wanted me. And hopefully I was able to do some kind of good. You know?
That's excellent. Yeah. That's excellent.
Well, thank you very much for being our guest today. It's it's really unique for someone to have your perspective, and really helpful, I think, for us and for our regular listeners who are going to be able to take some of this back into their churches and into their Christian walk. And I think that you've helped to encourage all of us to think through these issues a little more. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Yeah, it's, I always enjoy hearing more stories as well. And thank you again so much, Reed. Al, quick question. How's your Kickstarter for the Art of the Christian Ninja going?
Oh, it's so good right now. It's actually blowing my mind. The support has been incredible. I've only been doing it for about a week. I've gotten over a third of the goal that I want. I've had some amazing people come through and give some really generous gifts, so I really appreciate it. I feel like I'm on the push. Like there's a potential there where it could go either way. So if there's anybody out there that wants to get a copy of the book, or anybody out there that wants to support the printing of this book, it's still ready to go, and it'll continue to be for the next 22 days or so.
And on that topic, it's a great devotional that I can recommend. But if you're thinking about doing the Kickstarter, I just want to tell everyone, don't. You see, when I went on there, it said, if the project goes through, you actually have to pay your pledge. Well, I thought, oh, we'll never get this. I'll throw up a pledge. It looks like it's coming along. So if you finish it, I'm going to have to pay up, and that's the last thing I want to do.
I wondered why it was $666. That was really odd.
I've heard about this. Did you send me a thing on it? I can remember on the internet somewhere hearing about this.
Yes.
Maybe something I sent to you in the past? Or
yeah. I don't know. Yeah, this is not new. I've heard about this.
By all means, spread it around to all of your friends and neighbors. And
Kickstarter is a big mechanism for fundraising for startups, right. Authors, artists.
Yeah. If you want to raise funds for anything, I subscribe to Kickstarter because I've helped a few people who want to publish their books. And that's where I heard about it.
Excellent. Yeah. Cool.
Al's got a devotional book. If you like the Reformed Party of Canada, you should buy Al's book on Kickstarter.
The Reformed Party of Canada is extinct. Does that say anything about his book?
Chad's really bad at helping me. That's what I know. He's really bad at helping me.
This has been Carnivore Theology with Chad, Al, and Steve. Thank you for listening today as we discuss Christians and Politics with Reed Ellie, Part 2. Please don't forget to check out Al's Art of the Christian Ninja project on Kickstarter. To find out more about Carnivore Theology, or if you have any topics or questions you want us to cover in upcoming episodes, let us know by visiting us on our website, www.carnivoretheology.com, or leaving a message on our SpeakPipe page, speakpipe.com/carnivoretheology. If you like what we're doing, please share with your church and friends, like us on Facebook, rate and subscribe to us on iTunes, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. We encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.
Oh, wow. That's not one of the prepared questions. Oh, gosh. That was one story I remember.
And I can't even put it in the podcast.
I know. And the other
FDP leader Tom Milclair endorses L's book.
Whether he knows it or not, he's on there.
I saw Justin Trudeau climbing up an elevator escalator the other day, saying something about Christian ninjas. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that, Ed. All of a sudden, it stops.
Yeah,
I'm going anywhere, and I'm thinking, you know, that's a fairly decent estimation of where he's taking us.
You know what? I don't think he said Christian ninja. I think he said, "I wish all the Christians would disappear."